Everyone, and welcome to not only minute 120, but also my 1,000th episode of this podcast. And we are right now on minute 120 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week and to celebrate this 1,000th episode is documentary filmmaker Dana Nachman. Welcome back to the show, Dana.
Congratulations on your 1,000th episode.
Yeah. I'm excited. And, you know, it only took me 3 years to get to 1,000 episodes. That's not bad.
That's pretty good. That shows a lot of tenacity.
Well, come on.
Yeah.
Well, when you have a show that comes out every day, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So, and I'm very honored that you're joining me for this monumental episode.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll get in 3 years' time. We'll do 2,000.
There you go. I will save it for you. I will try to save it for you. I can't promise everything. I will try.
Okay.
All right. So minute 120 begins with Miller continuing to fiddle with the espresso machine, and ends with a shot of listening to the music of Edith Piaf. You know, so it has a panning shot as we're dealing with that. So I mean, yesterday we ended things with Miller, you know, finding this strange espresso machine and starting to fiddle around with it. The funny thing is what, you know, I was looking at it, you know, since we talked about the episode yesterday, I was looking at it again, and it looks like it's just, you know, a really bad prop, because it just looks like it's very, very light and thin. I mean, I don't know. I've never used an espresso machine, especially not one that was used in 1944, but it doesn't look as sturdy as you would expect an espresso machine to be.
Yeah, I know. It really does. I mean, that's one way to look at it. Other way to look at it is, you know, it's that really fine kind of metal that's like lightweight. I don't know. It could be that's a very high-end one.
It's mithril, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it's funny when you watch it this way. I didn't really notice it when I was watching it in the context of the whole film. But when you watch it this way, it does seem like an awfully long time that he's fiddling with that.
Yes.
I might have thought that could have been like a slight cut. Like, we got the point that he really wanted it. I don't know.
Well, let's put it this way. In this minute, he spends 27 seconds.
Yeah, and then I don't know what it was.
And we had a few seconds, you know, yesterday. So that is a long...
Like, did it need 30 cut. Seconds of that or more? I don't know.
Probably not. Maybe they're trying to show that as nice of a guy as Miller is, he does get easily frustrated when he doesn't have coffee. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Really weird.
But you're right. It is. I mean, again, we still have another 49 minutes of this movie ahead of us, and you'd think that, you know, I'm sure Spielberg had his reason for keeping in, you know, maybe 40 seconds of a coffee machine. There must be something behind it. But since unfortunately Steven Spielberg doesn't do commentaries on his movies, so we'll never be able to find that information out.
Yeah, and it's a little weird, like the last shot here, like when it like then is, you know, shaking. I thought that was actually a really strange shot, because like it made me feel like somebody was underneath there and doing that, and I shouldn't really feel that way. You know what
Maybe
I mean?
Maybe it like, has a mind of its own.
Yeah, I thought that was a little odd. Like the whole thing, maybe, was that supposed to be funny? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to be like an AI, you know. An AI version of an espresso machine where it has its own mind, you know.
Yeah, maybe that was very,
you know, back when we used to refer to AI as something that, you know, is basically robotic, as opposed to nowadays AI just means anything artificial.
Right.
It's more AI generated as opposed to that type of thing. But it's again, I completely agree with you. He spends way too much time dealing with this. You know, trying to get those little bits of probably very cold coffee out of there.
Right.
You know, it's not as if the machine was on recently and, you know, maybe it's lukewarm or anything like that. Whatever's in there is completely freezing, even though it's June.
Right.
That would be my guess from that perspective. You know, so, I mean, yesterday we spoke a little bit about espresso machines, but we didn't speak about espresso itself. So what do you know? I mean, you mentioned that I think you said your husband likes drinking espressos, but you don't.
Yeah.
But,
no.
You know. So what do you know about what is an espresso?
What is it?
Yeah. No, like what's the difference between an espresso and a regular cup of coffee that you like, whatever it is?
Oh, it's just less.
Yeah, I don't drink coffee, so I know the names, but I don't know what the difference is.
Right. It's just less water, more like stronger, like a shot of espresso rather than a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So officially, an espresso is a concentrated form of coffee that's produced by forcing hot water under high pressure through finely ground coffee beans. As we mentioned yesterday, it began in Italy, and it became one of the most popular coffee brewing methods worldwide. Mm. And like you said, that it's characterized by the fact that it's a small serving size. And, you know, sometimes people will have like a foam on top, some sort of topping, you know, which is known as crema. And basically the idea is that, you know, you put pressure under high concentrated coffee with a complex flavor for about 25 to 30 seconds. So basically the same amount of time that Miller is spending with the machine. Maybe that's what he was hoping for.
Oh, maybe. That's funny.
And what it does is it gives you a higher concentration of the coffee beans, and therefore it's thicker and more intense and things like that. But despite the stronger taste profile, espressos usually contain less caffeine than regular coffee does. And there's a whole bunch of different types of coffees that use espressos in them. So yesterday we mentioned Americano, and then you have cappuccino, cafe latte, and things like that. You can make an espresso with different types of coffee beans and roast levels, and so there's a whole bunch of different types of flavors and strengths and stuff like that. And basically the whole coffee shop culture basically made it even more popular, the fact that people would go into coffee shops and buy espressos, you know, things like that.
Right.
Do you know what the term espresso actually means?
I don't.
So it means to be pressed out.
Oh, that makes sense. That's how you do it. They press it. Yeah, that's cool.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It used to actually be called crema cafe, cream coffee. But now it's pretty much just referred to as espresso. So Miller's a little disappointed that he's not getting his espresso, I guess.
Yeah, he does not like that.
Well, I don't know if you know, when you're getting ready for a battle, if you want to start drinking espressos or anything like that.
Right.
I couldn't tell you. Now, did you notice that there's something on the wall right behind Miller, or right in front of him? Actually, it's behind the coffee machine.
I did, but I didn't know what it was.
Okay, so you see the letters BYRRH. So earlier in the week, we talked about the fact that there was an alcoholic drink that was advertised on one of the other buildings. And here, this is a wine, maybe you can even call it a wine spritzer. It's a aromatized wine aperitif, which is red wine, mistel, and quinine.
Huh.
And it was created in 1866, and they started bottling it in 1873. And it was very popular in the early 20th centuries. It was known as a hygienic drink.
Oh.
And despite the fact that it looks that the name looks similar to beer, that caused a lot of problems in America because people got confused.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it does look. I mean, it's yeah, that's interesting.
And so it was only sold in America up until Prohibition.
Huh.
And then in 2012, they actually reintroduced it into American stores.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. During World War II, it was very popular in Europe up until World War II. And during World War II, it started becoming less popular because of the idea of tax benefits. And they had all these different type of natural wines that people were more interested in drinking at the time.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, and there's a whole list of films that have this sign in the background. BYRH.
Really? That was product placement of that time.
Apparently, yeah. But
Okay.
obviously these are all apparently World War II movies. So you have Hitchcock's movie Rich and Strange from 1931 has it. An American in Paris, the Red Balloon from 1956, Dunkirk from 1958, Shoot the Piano Player from 1960.
Huh.
A movie that I'm a little familiar with, but I did not notice at the time what B I don't think I noticed what BYRH is the Great Escape. Again, here go. I can throw back to the first season where
Yeah.
they have that also. My assumption is it's probably in the scene when not Cavendish, when Sedgwick is in the cafe in France. That would be my guess of where it is in there.
Yeah.
Kelly Theroz also has it in it from 1970. And the other movie mentioned on this list is this movie itself. It's very interesting. Like you said, it's sort of product placement, but I think it's more also to give us the feel that we are right there. And this is
Right.
what they would have seen at the time, when they're trying to when they're walking through, when you want to get a cup of espresso. So you're gonna have an advertisement on the wall for
Right.
I don't
The
know how
Lake
you would pronounce it.
Calhoun.
I don't even know how would you think you pronounce it? Again, I don't know the answer to this. It's BYRRH. BYRRH. I don't know. I have no idea.
I guess buyer, which is what makes it sound like beer.
Oh, maybe. So then so you're saying the H is silent at the end.
I think. I'm not sure.
Okay, no, it actually makes sense because
Yeah.
as you said, it sounds like beer, so maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then at this point, Miller gets frustrated and decides to leave the area, leave the coffee area. And as you said, the machine jumps a little bit, saying, "Take
Yeah,
me with you, take me with you."
that's a weird shot. Yeah. But the
Well,
next shot
again,
is very cool.
when he's tipping it, you also see that it is not very sturdy.
Right. So yeah, this one doesn't. I mean, he needed, let's see. So he's walking. I mean, that's right. We have to see, he looks at it and then
He
it
looks at it
changed.
and it jumps. It looks like something that you would find out in Star Wars or
Yeah.
something like that, that R2-D2 is making a little,
Yeah, exactly. It looks a lot like R2D2. Yeah.
Yes. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe that's why it got 27 seconds in this minute.
Maybe.
Because Spielberg is giving a hat tip to Lucas.
Yep.
And then Miller walks out of the kitchen area, I guess, and then he puts his empty cup, I guess, or whatever he was able to get out of that machine on a little table that has his helmet and equipment, stuff like that. And then he goes and the camera pans as he's walking by Ryan, who's sitting there, I guess cleaning his gun or checking his gun at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very cool shot, I think. So it makes up for the last shot. So it goes from, Miller leaves the frame, right? And then the next shot, it's like it pans over. We see him. He keeps walking. And then he keeps walking, right? This is all. And then we pass by this beam and where he lands in the middle of this, road. I mean, that's a pretty cool shot, I think.
Yeah.
And makes up for the weird last shot.
Yeah. And also, I think it's great that we see Ryan before he walks past the pillar. And then, they show us the pillar with all the bullet holes in it also.
Yeah.
And then we get a clear shot down the street.
Yeah.
Seeing, again, all the rubble and everything that's, that's been destroyed on this particular, street here. So it's just very, very interesting. It's a great shot.
Yeah, and it's a 20-second shot also, I think. Let's see. It's about 20 seconds. It's a very cool.
Yeah. I think, again, this is, we talked about this a lot during the week, that Spielberg does a lot of show me stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what this looks like. They're showing us, the path that they want to get, the tank to come down.
Yep. I mean, they're showing a lot of things, right? So the bullet holes, I mean, it's more than 20 seconds. It was like 21, 22 seconds. They're showing the bullet holes. They're showing, I half wondered if, they're bored. He's showing that maybe that they're bored a little. That's why he spent so much time with the coffee machine. That could possibly be. And then, kind of Ryan looks a little bored sitting there. Like, things are slow. They're waiting. I mean, this kind of also shows that.
These guys are ready for the action to start again.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. It's just a question of it's a waiting game. They're sitting and waiting for something to happen here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a great observation. I didn't even think about it from that perspective.
And then also the next shot also reiterates that same point, right? They're just sitting watching. So like in the tower. So it's right. All kind of, so this minute, I guess, even though it seems kind of too long and, but I think the reason is because they're feeling like it's too long. So I think we can safely say that, because Spielberg's such a master that's what he's going for rather than just being, gratuitous.
Right. He wants us to feel the fact that these guys are bored.
Exactly.
Okay. Now what's interesting is when they show the guys in the tower, we actually now see that there are three up there instead of just two, because this is the only time that you actually see three guys there.
Huh. Okay.
Because when, earlier in the week when we saw them, doing the A-team stuff and going up, so it was just Jackson and Parker that were up there. And now we see there's a third guy who's there. And if I remember correctly, and obviously over the next few weeks, we'll see more. I believe that we never see three up there again.
Oh,
we only see two.
So it's a continuity issue.
I don't know. No, maybe it's not a continuity issue. Maybe again, that's showing what you're talking about. These guys are bored. So I got nothing to do. I'll climb up to the bell tower, to hang out with Jackson and Parker for a little while. I mean, that could be also.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a mistake. It could be. Once again, showing us why this is, that these guys are just waiting for something to happen.
Right. So my question is, after that shot, right, where they're looking out, then the next shot, is that them again, or is that their POV of something else? I think it's that. That's the wide shot.
After the tower?
Yeah.
After the tower, it's Miller's POV.
Okay.
Yeah. We get like 2 seconds of that. But
I wasn't sure if that was another tower they were seeing or if it was.
No. You definitely know that that's Jackson and Parker. that are there. That's for sure.
In the last shot.
In the very last shot of this minute, yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, there's also a little bit of dialogue between. We hear the music in the background, right? Mm-hmm. And then you know, Ryan asks Miller, he goes, "Who's that singing, sir?" And he goes, "Edith Piaf." And he goes, "What's she so upset about?" And he responds and goes, "Her lover left her, but she still wants to see his face everywhere she goes." And then Ryan goes, "Well, that would do it."
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice way for them to, you know. It's interesting. I mean, I don't know French, so you know, I was never able to pick up with the fact that she's upset about something. You know,
right.
My interpretation of the way she's singing is that okay, she's longing for something or whatever it is, but it doesn't sound like she's upset.
Right. You know,
that she, because the song is not a fast paced song. It's a relatively now do you know who Edith Piaf was?
Yes, I mean, I know sort of. I mean, yeah, French singer, that's all I know.
She was a French cabaret singer. She was born in 1915 and passed away in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And most of her songs are about love, loss, and sorrow. She has a number of songs that are that are quite famous. Most of the big ones were songs that came out after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually started her career in 1929 at the age of 14.
Wow!
When she started touring with her father. And you know, in 1945, after the war ended, that's when her signature song came out, La Vie est Rose.
Yeah.
You know, Marion Cotillard won an Oscar for playing her back in, I think it was like 2005, 2006, if I remember correctly. Something like that. In the late 40s, she was France's most popular singer, and she toured all around the world. She was on the Ed Sullivan Show 8 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. She passed away in 1963 at the age of 47.
Yeah, she was young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She died of liver cancer.
Oh.
And she was in advanced stages of the disease, and she slipped into a coma.
Oh wow.
And she was for a few months. She was it was most of 1963, because this happened in early 1963, and she passed away in October. And apparently her final words were, "Every damn thing you do in this life, you have to pay for."
Oh, geez. So was she a big drinker?
I don't know. Well, no, it wasn't liver disease. It was liver cancer.
Yeah, but still, you don't think that.
I don't know. I never profess to be a doctor and know how these things work.
I can Google it for you if you want. Can you get?
if you want to, you can. Meaning what? Is liver cancer related to drinking? Is that what you want to look up?
Let's okay. See. It says yes. The AI bot says yes. Drinking too much alcohol can increase your risk of liver cancer.
Okay. Okay. That's fair. that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss about this minute?
I don't think so. I think that covered it. There were long shots, easy to kind of figure out.
Right. Again, it goes back to what you were saying. He's letting us see what we're going to, you know, the terrain that we're going to be dealing with shortly.
Yeah.
And it's good to see it in a calm environment, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
so that maybe you can remember what it looks like or whatever it is.
Yep.
All right, very cool. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg movies, directed movies. So Dana, I know as a director this might be difficult for you to do, but someone's got to do it.
There's so many good ones. Okay, mine are starting with five. The Fablemans is number five. Number four is The Post. Number three is Munich. Number two is West Side Story, and number one is E.T.
Oh wow. Okay, that is a great list. What is E.T. on your list? Number one on your list because like me you were fond of having seen it in your youth.
I don't think so. I mean, I did, but I think I really appreciate it as much or more when I watched it with my kids later.
Okay.
It's a great movie. It's just and like a kind of sort of what all of my top fives are things they get higher up the more I would want to see them again, again, again and again. So, I mean, all of these I've seen more than once.
When was the
Actually,
last time you saw? When was the last time you saw E.T.? How long ago was it?
I don't know. Within the last 5, 10 years, probably more like five,
Okay.
I would say. I mean, West Side Story, I think I've only seen once, but I would see it again. But it's newer anyway. So like that goes into my thinking is how much would I want to see them again and again.
Okay. And the Fablemans, how many times have you seen that one?
I think I've just seen that one once also, just because I don't, oh, maybe I saw it twice. Once or twice. Maybe twice, actually. I think that might have been one where I saw not with my whole family, and then I thought my family should see it, so we went again. That happens sometimes.
Okay. That's
Yeah.
good. Why not?
Yep. Really good.
Excellent. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about the movie?
No, I kind of enjoyed watching it again, to be honest.
You kind of enjoyed it. That's a ringing.
Well, I liked it, but I don't like war movies that much. So I would never gear up to watch a war movie. So thank you for making me watch it again.
Okay, but do you actually consider this a war movie? Is it, like if
Yes.
you were, if no, meaning, let me rephrase that. Would you call this an action movie or would you call this a drama?
Drama probably. I would say more drama. I mean, that's the reason why I can tolerate it is because I thought that the plot was more kind of sophisticated, or like a bigger plot than a lot of the war movies that I might see, like because they had this quest that beyond the battlefield,
Okay.
really. So I like that. So I would say, as war movies go, I liked
Okay.
it.
Excellent. That is great. All right. Well, Dana, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. My website is dananockman.com, and I'm on all different social media that you can find through my website.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So Dana, thank you very much for once again joining me this entire week. This was a lot of fun. Very educational for me. I always learned so much about the filmmaking techniques,
Oh.
When I'm on when I have you on my show. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's very fun.
All right, great. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest, but until then, earn this.
Earn this.
My solitude.